Today's episode of the Hi Hat Film Podcast is brought to you by Initech. Yeah, I'm gonna need you to buy some Initech software. Hello everyone and welcome once again to the Hi Hat Film Podcast, a comical and critical look at the world of cinema with me, your host Michael Clancy. Alright, here we go, episode number 30, and boy oh boy do we have a show for you today. Following the induction of Jaws, one of the most crowd-pleasing movies of all time in our last episode, this week we literally could not be taking you in a more different direction with the 1982 poetic documentary Koyaanisqatsi. If you're aware of the film, then the chances are you're positively salivating at the prospect of a podcast dedicated to this entire film. If you're not familiar with this, well, all I can say is prepare to have your minds blown. Making the case this week is the features editor of the Telstar Film Review and soon-to-be podcaster in his own right, Joe Morrison. We're going to be talking all about this feature today, including but not limited to what possessed him to choose a heavily image-based film as a main discussion point of an audio-exclusive podcast. As well as that, Joe's going to be running the gauntlet in the attack of the Rotten Tomatoes. Before we go into that, though, we need a little clip of the film. And now, no 2-minute trailer could possibly prepare you for the roller coaster that is Koyaanisqatsi. But in the interest of going through the motions, here is a little snippet of that trailer.
Critics around the world have called it a remarkable film event, a breathtaking experience, a fusion of image and sound. Until now, you've never really seen the world you live in.
And joining me now for another attempted submission into the Hi Hat Hall of Fame, I'm delighted to welcome freelance film journalist Joe Morrison. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Ah, pleasure, pleasure. How you been?
I've been pretty good, actually. Busy working away. I've been writing reviews and coming up with my own podcast to try and rival your own.
All right. We'll maybe leave it to the end before you get the shameless plug-in in, but it's good to have you on nonetheless, and it's going to be, you've got a lot of explaining to do, basically, with your choice of film, but we'll maybe get to that in just a minute. I don't want to get too much into that. There's a couple of trials by fire that you have to go through before you can even talk about the film that you're going to submit for the Hall of Fame.
Yes, I'm ready.
Right, well, I mean, first up, it's a film podcast. We maybe only talk about one film per show, so let's try and branch out a little bit of it. What's the last thing you saw in the cinema?
The last film I saw in the cinema was Dracula Untold with Luke Evans.
Oh, why?
Yeah, it wasn't much cop, to be honest.
No, I remember seeing a trailer for it a couple of months ago, and I thought it was like an advert for like a new like TV series that was starting in America, because they start showing adverts for TV series there, and I was surprised to see it was actually a feature film.
Yeah, it's not Dracula as well, as you sort of, they keep saying it's Dracula, but not as you know him, unless you've seen the Francis Ford Coppola film, in which case it does that in 5 minutes, that whole story.
Right.
He's like a loving dad and a nice guy, and it's just very soft, watered down and not very enjoyable, and it's more like a fantasy film than a horror film, to be honest. just boring. It wasn't awful, but wasn't good either.
No, fair enough. I might give that a miss. I saw, I went to see Box Trolls the other day, and I slept through about 80% of it, unfortunately. I'm ashamed to admit.
Yeah, that is a shame. I actually really enjoyed Box Trolls when I saw it.
It was one of those ones I'd actually spent 12 hours on a bus the day before, so I was absolutely exhausted. I was asleep before the film even started, so I woke up about 5 minutes into it, so and then just kept on dozing off through it. The bits I was awake for I really enjoyed, but yeah, I'm going to have to go back and give that one another go.
That's a ringing endorsement there, Michael.
Yeah, no, I am ashamed, you know, as someone who likes to think of myself as a professional freelance film journalist falling asleep before the films even start, but it looked alright, so I'll maybe have to dip back into that.
They actually, the animation studio Laika are really good. They did Coraline and Paranorman.
Yeah, I loved Coraline. I loved Coraline. I thought that was terrific.
But that's they're fantastic. So that's their, I guess they're the new Pixar.
Is that your take on it?
I would say so. Anyway, I mean the early Pixar years when they were every single film was a classic was, I mean, those days are gone now. Brave kind of underwhelmed. There's been two Cars movies now.
Yeah.
Seems like Disney are kind of taking the charge again with Tangled and the likes.
Yeah.
Whereas Laika, on that sort of run of every film I've seen of theirs has been excellent, really high standard.
Yeah, I do like the kind of creepy animation technique that they take to it.
Yeah, it is. It's, well, when I was a kid as well, I used to really love sort of the dark, macabre type things. Gremlins was a big favourite of mine as a child. And a lot of films for kids now seem to shy away from the scares for kids.
They try to wrap them up in cotton wool instead of exposing them to the grungy side of life.
Exactly. And kids love all that stuff as well. Kids love looking at the grotesque. I used to love monsters and all that kind of stuff. And obviously, age appropriate. It's not terrifying, but it's just sort of edgy enough for kids to really enjoy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, as I say, certainly nothing against the film, the fact that I dozed off to it. It was a circumstance thing, but I enjoyed what I saw from it, and it seemed like good voice work as well, so going to dip back into that at some point. So moving on, just to test your credentials to see if you can submit a film, we're going to do a round of quickfire questions. Does that sound all right to you?
That sounds grand, yeah.
Okay, let's see what side your bread is buttered. Spike Lee or Spike Jones?
Spike Jones.
Ants or A Bug's Life?
Ants.
Emma Stone or Emma Thompson?
Emma Stone?
There Will Be Blood or No Country for Old Men?
There Will Be Blood every day of the week.
I gotta go with you on that one. Kevin Smith or Quentin Tarantino?
Tarantino.
James Bond or Jason Bourne?
James Bond.
Pixar or Studio Ghibli? Or I suppose we'll throw in Laika there as well.
Is this for now or just of all time?
Gut reaction.
Gut reaction, I'd say Pixar then.
Yeah. Dwayne The Rock Johnson or Vin Diesel?
Cool! I'm gonna have to go with The Rock.
Yeah, you know, Vin Diesel almost clawed it back with I Am Groot, but yeah, I think I'd still go with The Rock.
That's no Scorpion King, though, is it?
True enough. White Russians or Martini, shaken not stirred.
White Russians.
The Avengers or Guardians of the Galaxy, or in brackets, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Good shout out. The Avengers.
Fair enough. And finally, Hudson Hawk or Ethan Hawk?
I think this has been tailored for me. I really have problems with Ethan Hawk, so I'm going to go with Hudson Hawk, as bizarre as that sounds.
Fair enough. All right, yeah, good enough answers there. We can move on with that. The final test before we get to talking about your film is another round of the game that is sweeping the internet podcasting world, Attack of the Rotten Tomatoes, as we'll call it from this side of the Atlantic. We have had three competitors doing it so far. It's basically a high or low game based on a category of films and their score on how well they did on the Metacritic website Rotten Tomatoes. So we've had three competitors so far. The lowest score we've had so far is 5 out of 10. Highest score we've had is 8 out of 10. You want to take a run at that?
Yeah.
All right, good.
For sure. I'm anxious, to be honest, but yeah, come on, let's do it.
Okay, so you've got a choice of categories that you can go for today, and your choices of categories are movies based on Marvel Comics. You can have talking animal movies, or you can have movies where Brendan Gleeson dies.
I'm going to go with talking animals movies, because I heard you offer that suggestion before, and they didn't take it, and I really wanted to.
Okay, fair enough. Alright, so I'll give you a film, I'll tell you the score, you have to tell me whether it's going to be high or lower, or sometimes the rarely played equal value. Just know that is an option as well sometimes. So,
yeah.
The first film you have is the talking animal classic. If I said it was a Disney one featuring the voice of Michael J. Fox, would you be able to hazard a guess?
The Incredible Journey.
Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey is the film I'm offering you for, and it's a starting score of surprisingly 88% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that's your starter score. Your next one is the 1967 Rex Harrison version of Dr. Doolittle. Do you think that scored higher or lower than 88%?
I'm going to go lower.
Lower? Yeah. Well,
yeah.
If you had to take a guess, and this won't affect your score, what would you imagine Dr. Doolittle came in at?
Well, it was Oscar nominated, I think, but everyone hated it, so I'd say maybe low 60s, 62.
Dr. Doolittle scored a 32% on Rotten Tomatoes, so it really got a bit of a kicking when it first came out, it seems. But I'm very surprised. It is sort of regarded as a classic, but not doing too well here. All right, so 32% is what you've got for Dr. Doolittle. Your next one is the third in a trilogy featuring the voice of Bruce Willis, starring Kirstie Alley and John Travolta. Look Who's Talking Now.
I'm going to say lower still.
Lower than 32%. You were right to say it was lower. So you've got 2 out of 2 so far. Look Who's Talking Now scored a massive 0%. So that is... it's been universally panned. Absolutely nobody liked that one.
That's amazing. That's hard to do. That's stupid.
They couldn't find anybody to like it. Alright, so maybe something of an open goal for you on the next one, or is it? I don't know, you might have even seen this film. It was in cinemas this year. I think anyone that is listening to this outside of the UK will have never heard of this film. It is Pudsey the Dog, the movie. Do you hear about this film?
Yes, I remember when it came out.
David Walliams doing the voice. I don't really understand the backstory. I think it was the dog was a contestant on Britain's Got Talent or something. And
I think it won.
It did? Okay.
I think so, maybe. That was what its prize was. I don't know. I don't know either.
And now it's... So it's a movie, and did it score more than 0% is the important question.
Well, as bad as it looked, I can't imagine... Yeah, I'm going to say... 2% or something, really tiny, but yeah, little bit more than zero.
You're going a little bit more than zero. I'm sorry to tell you that Pudsey the Dog, the movie, scored the very rare equal of 0%.
The foreshadowing before when you gave me the rules.
Yeah, I dropped that one in there just so people know. It's not come up yet, but it might come up again in the future, and I might not always give people clues, so people need to listen. Okay, so you've got 2 out of 3 so far. Next up is the popular dog playing basketball movie Air Bud.
Right, it's got to be higher than zero, surely.
At 45%, yes, it is higher. You're back on the right track there, 45%. Next up was a recent animated feature. It seems all movies are doing now is kind of taking things I like from childhood and completely bastardizing them, and this is another one of that. Alvin and the Chipmunks is the next one, the Jason Lee vehicle. with Singing Chipmunks. Do you think that scored higher or lower than 45%?
Is this the second or the third one, or just the first one?
Just the first one. We're not talking the Squeakwell here. We're talking...
Or the Chipwrecked. I... 45%? I'll say... Yeah, lower. Lower.
Yeah, 27% is what it scored, so there you are again. You've got 4 out of 5 so far, on your way so far to at least equaling the high score. Your next one is Babe 2, Pig in the City. Sequel to the massively successful and popular Babe Talking Sheep Pig film.
I haven't seen it, and... I think higher. I'll go with higher.
It is higher, and would you be surprised to hear that it actually scored a 62%? So it's actually fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. I always thought it got a bit of a kick in, but apparently not.
I think it's kind of weird enough for some critics to actually really enjoy it, though, from what I hear about it. It's quite dark.
Yeah, no, I never saw it. I did quite enjoy Babe. So you've got 5 out of 6 so far, all going so well for you. And next up we have the Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. And this is the most recent film adaptation, the Disney one with Liam Neeson as Aslan and Tilda Swinton as the White Witch. And 62% is the score to beat.
60, I'll go with higher for that.
Higher? With 76%, yeah. Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is higher than Babe 2, Pig in the City. So 76, you're on a roll right now. Let's see if we can carry on with the long-awaited sequel. I think this film holds one of the records for longest distance between original and sequel. If I gave you that clue, would you be able to guess what the next film is?
The Return to Oz?
It is Return to Oz with the talking chicken, yes. So Return to Oz, did that score higher than lower than... Higher or lower than The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe at 76%?
I'll say lower.
I really enjoyed the film, but at 55%, it seems not everybody did. So yes, lower again. So doing very well. You've got 2 left. I suspect you're going to be able to get this next one. It is the Kevin James comedy romp set in a zoo, Zookeeper.
We might be getting back into putsy territory here. I think, we're going lower.
It is lower, and it is kind of shocking that in a world where Pudsey the dog can't find a single person to say anything nice about it, the fact that 14% of the film reviewing fraternity saw fit to give Zookeeper favourable reviews is a damning number indeed. Alright, so you've got 8 out of 9 so far. Your final one now is another sequel, another disappointing sequel to a childhood classic of mine. It is Big Top Pee Wee.
Oh, wow. And what's the score it's got to?
14% is the score to beat.
Gotta be higher.
At 35%, it is higher, so... Joe, you finish up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 out of 10, which makes you the highest scorer in Attack of the Rotten Tomatoes to date. I'm a little bit relieved you didn't get the 10 out of 10, because I might have just had to have drawn a line under the game right then and there. But congratulations, a fine score indeed.
Hey, what can I say? I love talking animals movies.
Yeah, it's just that little bastard Pudsey the dog that's...
Yeah, now I've got an extra reason to hate him.
Definitely. Well, I think based on your quickfire questions and your very, very impressive score, we can advance now to talking about the main reason that you're here is submitting a film for consideration for the High Hat Hall of Fame, and it is the 1982 Godfrey Reggio movie... I'm sure I'm going to butcher that all the time, and I might even dub it over later on.
You should dub it over with the singing from the song. It's Koyaanisqatsi,
yes, of course. Yeah, 1982 film. It scored 8.3 rating on the IMDb, so a popular one there. Music by Philip Glass, cinematographer Ron Frick. Yeah, I'm sure you have lots to say about it. Usually... when we have people on, the first question I ask is to get them to summarize the plot, but I think we both know that that would be a futile exercise for you. So my opening question to you, Joe, is what's going on here?
Good question. Okay, so Koyaanisqatsi is a film without a plot, without dialogue or narration. It's basically a series of really beautiful photography edited alongside music by the minimalist composer Philip Glass. That's essentially what unfolds across the 100 or so minutes that the film lasts for. Although there's not a plot, there's certainly a theme. The theme being, I guess, a sort of environmentalist theme on a broadest sense, but on a more specific sense, it's about the relationship between humanity and the environment and the impact that humanity has had on the environment. This all sounds frightfully dull, but when you watch it, there's something quite hypnotic and compelling about the film.
Hmm. So, no plot, no dialogue, lots of interesting visuals and sound mixed together. My next question, Joe, is, are you trolling me? Because fans of the show will, if you go back to the early days when I used to do this show with my friend Nick Murray, we had a section called the DVD Club, and the idea behind it is we would pick a film for each other to watch for the next show and then talk about it. And it was only after about 3-4 weeks that it descended into Nick just picking the foulest thing that he could think of and getting me to watch Cannibal Holocaust, and I sat down with that, and not only did I have to sit through the film, which is, you know, sufficiently nasty, but I also had to calm down my girlfriend, who was traumatized. We quickly dropped that section and then turned it over to the listeners to pick for the DVD Club. And the first film that the listeners picked for us to watch was Audition, the Japanese shock horror film. So there's a history of people using my podcast to make me just sit down and watch the most weird and bizarre films. Is that what's going on here?
No, not at all. Not at all. I've been listening to the Hall of Fame entries so far, and they've all been very good. Open goals, you might say. Sort of. Some of them, anyway. Who's going to disagree with Stand By Me or Jaws? So I thought I'd try something a bit different. Mm-hmm. But as well, when I was thinking about it, I think that this film actually really represents something that only cinema's capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's probably the main reason that I'm so taken with the film.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't
write a novelization of that movie.
I mean, I was joking with my trolling question, because I did watch it this morning, and probably watched it in the worst possible conditions. You know, I'm just coming off of a few days of heavy traveling, 12-hour bus journeys and 8-hour flights and stuff. So to say I'm jet-lagged is something, and I watched it this morning, but I was absolutely mesmerized by it. I think it's a remarkable achievement. So thank you for that. But what drew into you the first time you saw it?
Well, the first time I saw it, I suppose I should probably say as well that before I'd seen it, I'd read about it. Mm-hmm. In a magazine. They'd sort of described it as a masterpiece, and it was this film with an unpronounceable title, with the person that was writing this feature about it was really struggling to express what the actual content of the film was. And as a teenager, this just sounded like the most interesting thing I could possibly watch, but it was really hard to track down due to rights issues. So it was a long, long time before I saw it, and it was always something that I'd had a sort of interest in seeing, especially as well the music by Philip Glass. I was quite familiar with Philip Glass's music from other films that he scored, so that it became almost this sort of holy grail for me to finally find and track down Koyaanisqatsi. Mm-hmm. So when I did manage to watch it, it was almost like an event, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was, at last I've got this.
And I know we've gone through a couple of film courses together. Was this before your university education in film and television studies, or was this prior to it?
This would have probably been, I would imagine, during the early days of the film and TV course. Like I say, it was quite hard to track down.
Yeah.
So I think it only really became available on DVD in the sort of early noughties.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always quite expensive as well, because it's in that obscure world cinema documentary avant-garde thing that, you know, no one goes to that section in the HMV or the video shop.
Yeah.
So they can charge whatever they want for it.
Yeah. Well, and now, thanks to the miracle of digital home viewing, I was able to rent it off iTunes for £2.50. So times have changed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Kids don't know what they've got nowadays.
Yeah, definitely. And is it a film that you've gone back to and had repeated viewings with, or is it a classic one-watcher?
Oh, no, I've watched it several times, to be honest. I've probably watched it about four or five times. It's it definitely requires probably, I'd say, a year or two in between, but there's such a lot going on in it that you can always bring something from it. You can always gather something from it.
Mm-hmm.
Even just in certain shots, because there's not really a central focus on a shot, you can look at any part of the screen and you can watch what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to take on board. Last time I watched it, Tuesday, I think, a couple of days ago, and I was just fascinated with the editing. And I always have something new that sort of brings a sort of frisson of, this is what cinema is, you know? This is what cinema's about. This is what cinema can do.
It's interesting you say that, because even making my notes today, you know, I watched the film this morning, as I said, and then later this afternoon was taking notes, and I kind of wanted just to get snippets of the soundtrack, so went back and kind of put it on again, and even just like the 30-second, minute-long parts that I kind of dipped into kind of picked up different stuff that I'd missed the first time round, so there's certainly a lot going on there, no question about it. What is it about the film that you love so much?
Well, I guess, I mean, like I say, it is the sort of purest form of cinema that you can get. It's unencumbered by any of the traditional modes of storytelling. I mean, cinema, its most basic is the interplay between time, space, sound and image,
mm-hmm.
which is all that film is, and it doesn't add on anything further. I think as well, when you watch it, every single aspect of it, from the photography to the music to the editing, is of the highest standard. It's incredible. Every single part of it is exquisitely put together. I really love that movie, and I wouldn't watch it. You know, it's not a Friday night movie. It's maybe something a bit more contemplative, but it's definitely a movie that I will be watching again in future and showing to people in future, because I think it's something that needs to be seen and appreciated by people.
On the last show, I was talking. It was maybe one of those open goals that you were referring to. We had Jaws on the show, and I was talking about how the soundtrack just so perfectly kind of captured the tone of what that film was about and elevated it. And I think, again, here, the music, the Philip Glass score that we talked about, is just remarkable in terms of matching the pace, the tone, the images on display, and it's just, it's such an achievement, just getting that music that finds it and fits it and says what the filmmaker wants it to say.
If you don't like Philip Glass, you're not going to like Koyaanisqatsi.
Well, I mean, I'm never going to sit down and pop the CD to the soundtrack in the CD player and listen to it, and not just because that's a redundant technology now and I could get it on my iPhone, but I'm never just going to sit down and listen to the soundtrack, as fantastic as I think it is. I just think it's one of the great film soundtracks because it fits so well with the film. You know, I think if you took the soundtrack, if you did something different with the soundtrack, you'd have a completely different film, and that's why I think it's so remarkable.
Yeah, although having said that, I do have a tendency to blare the Koi Hanuskati soundtrack while I'm doing housework. It makes me feel like what I'm achieving is something monumental and epic. So, it can sort of translate, but it's certainly not something you would sit down and listen to on the bus, for example.
No. I mean, you have the... And just the variety to it as well. I mean, you have the opening blast, which is kind of this threatening synth music, with, and then it pipes up with the monastery choir from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. They come in with repeating the film title over and over again. But then, you know, it's so varied. You have something that's almost like a carnival ride as it kind of dips through like the mountain landscapes and through the cities, and then you've got like something that's a bit more hymnal and stuff that's kind of approaching epic superhero music. It's just fantastically varied stuff. I really enjoyed it.
I think as well, it really sort of guides the viewer, because there are certain times where the music actually is cueing you up for something that maybe the visuals haven't fully revealed yet.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sequence where it cuts from an atomic bomb explosion in the deserts, and then it cuts to people lying on a beach sunbathing, and then as the sort of camera pulls back, you realise that they're sunbathing literally about, I don't know, a couple hundred metres from a huge power station, a huge nuclear power station.
In the shadow of a nuclear plant.
Yeah, and so, but the music's already giving you this sort of foreboding sense, when really what you should be looking at is people sunbathing on the beach, but that's given this sinister edge through the music, and then this sort of sinister truth is revealed as it reaches its peak.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fantastic score, a really good score, because, like you say, you can't imagine the film without it. Well, it wouldn't be the film without it. It would be something else entirely.
It's funny just trying to break down and have a conversation about this, because, you know, when you normally have a conversation about a film, it's like, oh yeah, the directing was good, and I like this scene and I like this scene. But trying to break it down here, we've got, well, we can talk about the music, and then we can talk about the pictures, and then we can talk about the pictures and the music, and we can throw in the message and all of that. So it's a very different air to the show. But
yeah, it is. I think it's more contemplative as well. I think it actually makes you sort of question yourself or your place in the world. I mean, when you're watching it, there's a sort of general movements from it. So there's a point where there's the comparison between the hustle bustle of New York and then the appalling squalor that people were living in housing projects in the 70s in America.
Mm.
You get this and you've got quite a sort of personal connection with the people. You're seeing the people up close and they're walking at a normal pace. Then as they sort of investigate further the urban life, the pace gets more and more quickened until it reaches a delirious speed, and the music is just overwhelming, and the people start to become more and more distant and way more sort of like components of a larger machine. But then after that, after you've seen the sort of giddy high of this, it cuts back to people in a much more personal space again, like it was before, but this time there's like a dislocation. So whereas before the people were involved in a society, in this one it's kind of outcasts. There's vagrants and people who are looking for help but can't get any help, and there's this, you've almost been brought to this point where the through line of the film is showing you that, yeah, okay, there's a lot of cool stuff, a lot of amazing achievements that humanity's done, but actually what we're doing is we're alienating ourselves, not just from the planet or nature, but from each other and from ourselves. Mm. We're all islands now walking around in these cities. There's no personal connection. And this is like 32 years ago, before everyone had their head in a Kindle or on their iPhone or whatever, where this has just been accelerated further now, and now you can really see these issues or themes or worries about the personal connection with people and other people. It's, I mean, you know, there's so much going on. When you want to see new sort of themes, new, I guess, narrative arcs, but there's not a narrative. And that's what's so exciting about the film, I suppose, is that it makes you bring your own thoughts to it. So, I would imagine if I watched this in 20 years' time, I'd probably have a completely different take on it.
I think it's almost, you know, so fantastic are the shots, and it's such an achievement, and the music, as we've said, kind of has a mesmerizing effect. It almost, like, you almost lose sight of the message. So impressed are you with everything. I mean, there was definitely a couple of scenes where I was, like, so busy just admiring, like, the comings and, like, it was the shots of, like, New York during commuting, and there's, like, these swarms going up the escalators and people's kind of zigzagging through bus stations and stuff like that. And, you know, so impressed by just, like, all of the fact that it's teeming with life that, you know, I kind of missed out on the fact that it's highlighting overpopulation problems and issues with pollution and things like that. And it's one that you almost lose yourself, like, in the images on display, that you almost forget and why you're there in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot to be said about that, because I know that a lot of people sort of argue whether it's actually a sort of strongly anti-human and anti sort of the interference of humans on nature, or if there's a slightly more ambiguous... I mean, I personally feel that there's something a bit more ambiguous at work there with the way that he approaches, or they approach, large buildings, for example. There's like a reverent look up, or the way that, you know, people are gathered round in masses looking at this incredible achievement that we've done. Spaceships going off into the sky, or bridges, or, you know, all these sorts of crazy things. But then there's also this undercurrent of, well, maybe we've gone too far, or maybe this isn't necessarily a good thing. It's quite sort of, I guess it's subtle in a way, but it's also really thunderingly powerful as well, you know. It tries to have its cake and eat it.
Yeah, well, as I say, you can kind of get lost within it, and yet, you know, sandwiched in between that, you have the, the title itself, Life Out of Balance, is a bit of a giveaway of the message, but then if just in case you miss it at the end, it kind of gives you the definitions of Koya Nisgati and... the translations of the Hopi prophecies that are sung in the film as well, and just the final shot of the film in itself, you know, you've got that rocket going up into space and then bursting into flames, and then it just spiraling down forever and ever. You know, it says a lot right there.
Yeah, it does. It does. It's it's a film as well that starts with images of cave paintings, and straight from that goes to a shuttle launch. So it's got big ambition and big themes, big grand themes about the whole entirety of human civilization and their development and the effect that it's had on nature as well. The sequence where humans are introduced as well is actually a really striking one, because before that you've got mainly nature, rock landscapes, which are then sort of matched with seascapes, and you start to see similar patterns, and then the seascapes are matched with footage of clouds in high speed, so they start to resemble sea wave patterns. And then from there we go into the sort of landscapes, the undulating landscapes that have been formed by these sort of natural water and natural things. And then as it's going through this undulating thing, suddenly it comes across fields, and all the fields are uniform flowers. It's like a tulip farm or something, and you're flying across and you're like, oh right, okay, I see now. This is such an elegant way of saying what I've just said with words, they've managed to do with images and music in far less time and far more clearly than I could ever manage.
Yeah, it is remarkable how it does that. And what's your take on this sort of poetic form of the documentary, where it kind of pieces these things together? I mean, it's certainly a tough sell, and, you know, we have someone in last week talking about Jaws, and we've had some of the bigger films of cinema being brought up for the Hall of Fame. Is there a place for a film with no plot, no dialogue, anything like that? Is there room for it in the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think, for a start, variety is the spice of life. So you don't want to just have things that have I think this is also a film that you could really use as a time capsule for America at a certain time in history as well. But I do think that there's certainly a place for films like that. Wouldn't it be boring if every film was the same? I know what you mean about this sort of tone poem type film, because sometimes these films can be interminable, really boring and self-indulgent. I think that this film in particular, there's also Ron Frick, who did the cinematography. He directed a couple of similar features, Baraka and Samsara.
Right.
They're also like a very high standard. Don't have the same sort of interplay between the music and the image, but the actual images and the links between the images are fantastic. I certainly think that films like this really do stand up as examples of what the art form is capable of, the art form of cinema. And maybe it's not something that people want to watch on a Friday night, but that's okay. People don't want to read Moby Dick, but it doesn't mean that Moby Dick isn't a great book.
Well, that's a fair point, although, you know, the chapters in Moby Dick where he just lists his encyclopedic knowledge of whales, I think, is some of the finest pages ever committed to literature.
I don't think I managed to get that. I think I got as far as Call Me Ishmael, and then I was like, this book's very heavy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a tough sale, Joe. I mean, people in general like films with words in them. I mean, people didn't go to see All Is Lost with Robert Redford because it was just him in a boat, and he doesn't speak to anyone, and that's Robert Redford, mate. Here we've just got a bunch of people that get like a little portrait for 10-15 seconds. So
that's true.
I do think
though that popularity doesn't instantly equal merit though, as well, is what I would say. I think that, you know, some things that are great are really sort of underappreciated until a certain point. And maybe the time is now. Maybe the time is now for people to get excited about Koyaanisqatsi.
This is the medium. I need to make sure that I can pronounce it right before I can even begin to consider letting it in. Koyaanisqatsi.
Yeah, that's maybe a problem, isn't it? Yeah.
Why couldn't they just call it Life Out of Balance? I mean, just do the translation.
Do you know what he originally wanted to call it? An unpronounceable symbol, like what Prince did in the 90s. So we'll just be glad that he didn't. At least you can kind of almost say Koyaanisqatsi.
Fair enough. Before we get to whether it's in or out or not, I definitely want to make sure that you have a chance to put forward all the sides of your argument. Is there anything we're missing, and is there anything we haven't touched upon before we get to the grisly business of whether it's in the club or out?
Well, I guess as well you could see the way that a lot of its visual style, especially the high-speed photography things, have really been brought into the mainstream from that film. You can see that sort of, especially the scenes of people driving at night where there's just a blur of light and colour, you can see a lot of images like that in music videos or advertising. It's really obviously had a large impact on the way that people try and communicate visually. I'd also say that there's been so many sort of spoofs or references to Koyaanisqatsi. I believe The Simpsons had an itchy and scratchy cartoon called Koyaanisqatsi. Scrubs had...
Why didn't you open with that argument, Joe?
You know what? I saved the best till last. You've got to... keep the big guns till the last, Clancy.
Right. Sorry, I cut you off before you got onto Scrubs. On you go.
All right, so Scrubs, there's also a bit where the janitor is staring, he's eyeballing the JD, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's eyeballing JD, and Koyaanisqatsi is playing on the music, and it's this sort of kind of comical scene because of how overblown it is.
Yeah.
And also the music is in Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa.
Is it? Oh, I didn't even
know. So there's your reference. Yeah. Fair. You get to hear Alan Partridge sing Koyaanisqatsi and Alpha Papa.
I'm going back to watch that on Netflix tonight. Okay, so I think I'm about ready to decide whether it's in or out. It's a tough one, and I've been saying for a while, you know, the longer we do this, the closer we get to a film that isn't going to be allowed entry into the Hall of Fame. Last week after submitting one of the biggest popcorn movies of all time and one of the most popular, I was inundated with a tirade of abuse from the beret-wearing, avocado-eating members of the art house cinema elite, saying that we need to branch out a little bit more, which is kind of why we're doing this film this week. But Joe, I know you not to be a member of that group. I've sat with you through films which have had the same kind of air of pretension, you might say. And so I know that you're not one of these pretentious film goers, and you're not just going with that. I think the case that you've made for the film, that, well, Variety of the Spice of Life is absolutely a fantastic one, and it's fair to say that it's unlikely that for however long I'm going to do this, I think you're our ninth submission, and I think for however long the Hall of Fame is open for, I don't think we're ever going to get a film that is quite like Koya Nascatsi, unless you want to come back and try your hand at doing the two sequels, the two follow-ups to it. But I don't know if you want to consider doing that further on down the line.
It was a toss up between Koya Nascatsi and Commando for my submission, and then Jaws sealed Koya Nascatsi, so.
Okay, well, that kind of proved my earlier point. That gives people an insight into your film choices as well. So knowing that it's good that you're willing to fly the flag for them. And as I say, as I watched it, it is absolutely remarkable. And I've sat through films of a similar ilk, and they are very hit and miss, and they're a tough sale for a reason. You know, they do require a certain level of concentration that the average cinema goer is perhaps not willing to give. But with this, I was just sucked up into it after about 5 minutes, and I just couldn't take my eyes off it. And it's everything on screen working in harmony in a way that the cinema is capable of doing, but in a way that isn't done all too often in cinema. You know, a lot of times, you know, the soundtrack will be an afterthought or something like that. So it is absolutely remarkable, everything that has come up with it. I think even just like that little point you dropped in about it being a nice little preservation piece for life in America in the 1980s, I think that's absolutely valid as well. So, with all that being said, and I'm going to repeat this to all the listeners, there is going to come a day where a film is not going to be allowed entry into the Hall of Fame. This isn't just everybody turns up, everybody gets a prize. There is going to come a day for that, but yet again, today is not that day. Joe, I'm delighted to say that Koya Nascatsi is taking its place, its rightful place, in the High Hat Hall of Fame, where it will sit alongside Jaws. And if anything else, it will, you know, the Hall of Fame will have notoriety of being perhaps the only list that features those two films side by side.
Yes, all the better for it. Well, I love Jaws as well, by the way. I don't have a problem with Jaws.
Yeah, you've come on, you've touted your vicious Jaws-hating campaign and how much you hate Rob Reiner and Stand By Me, and you think Stephen King's a dick, and yeah, that's you know, I'll edit all of that out, don't you worry. You know, people don't need to know that side of you. But congratulations, it was a very well-argued case, and thank you for turning me on to this film as well. You know, I hadn't heard of it, so thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for allowing Koya Nascatsi into the Hall of Fame. I'm sure Philip Glass will be delighted.
I'm sure he will. So now the hard part's out of the way, Joe. Let's get back to the shameless plug-in. You've got a podcast coming out along the way.
Yes, it's just in post at the moment. It will be up on Telstar Film Review.
Oh, I love those guys.
Yes, they've got some. It's got some good writers writing for them, and it is called Celluloid Skeletons. It's about film stars, their career, and then a weird film from their career. So the first one we're doing is Sean Connery. We'll be looking at Sean Connery and then talking about Zardoz.
Oh, terrific!
That's my plug.
That's awesome. I definitely look out for that. Yeah, I look forward to giving that a listen.
Yes, good stuff. I might even have you return the favour and appear on mine.
I'd be delighted. Yeah, just drop us a line when you need that. All right, thanks very much, Joe. Congratulations again. Congratulations also on taking the lead in Attack of the Rotten Tomatoes. All in all, it's been a very successful show for you.
It has, yeah. I'm going to do a victory lap now.
All right, I'll leave you to it. Cheers, mate.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Hat Hall of Fame.
And I'm sick of the high hat!
Wow, how do you like them apples? Against all odds, Kuyanaskatsi has managed to fight and claw its way into the High Hat Hall of Fame, making it film number 9 alongside The Big Lebowski, Princess Mononoke, Theater of Blood, Fight Club, Kill List, Stand By Me, She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, and Jaws. It really is shaping up to be a varied and unpronounceable list that as a community we're putting together. As Joe made a very strong case for, variety is indeed the spice of life, and the inclusion of this film is a further testament that any feature film can and will be considered for induction into the Hall of Fame. And regardless of the genre, the year, the nationality, or the unorthodox techniques adopted by the filmmaker, if you can make a strong case for it, then it has every chance of a place on this list. That being said, I want to put out a warning to all listeners who are thinking of using this podcast as a platform for your hilarious online pranks. Don't just be picking the most bizarre film ever made in a cruel attempt to make me watch it and then talk about it for 40 minutes or so on a podcast. The reason that Joe's argument was so successful is that it was clear that he cared a lot about the film. It's exactly what we're looking for on this show. With that in mind, if you'd like to be on a future episode of the High Hat Film Podcast, submitting a film for consideration for the High Hat Hall of Fame, then send me an email at highhatfilmreview@gmail.com. You can also join in the fun and games on Facebook at facebook.com/highhatfilmreview, as well as follow me on Twitter at @ClancyHighHat. And if you absolutely feel the need to catch up with all the previous 29 episodes of the podcast, there are about 10 available on iTunes, but all 29 episodes, as well as some written reviews, are available on our Tumblr page. That is highhatfilmreview.tumblr.com. That's it for me. I'm about to go play some ambient music and watch all of my old home movies in fast forward to see if it comes up anywhere near as artistically rewarding as Kuyanaskatsi. I'll be back next time with another High Hatter making a case for a film to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. I'll leave you with the final words of Obi-Wan Kenobi. If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine!
Give me my 20,000 in cash.
We came, we saw, we kicked his ass.
I think you woke up the dead with that blast.
We came, we saw, we kicked his ass.
Think fast, I talk fast.
We came, we saw, we kicked his ass.
Boss, this is not my Batman class.
Bomb squad anyway.
They're coming.
Okay, all right, listen. Let's stop here. Okay, stop here, and I'll just get out.
Don't get out the car, Riggs. No. Riggs!
Tell me, Rudge, was it red wire or blue wire?
Get out, Riggs! Get out of here! Step on the gas!
They're never going to believe this!
Oh, nobody saw us.
Okay, let's
keep cool. Yeah. Oh, I think you better get your good line of mothballs, Rudge.
I get it. We're back in uniform again.
The one that fits.
10 more years of this. 10 more years.
Oh, I'm too old for this shit.